Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson. And joining me this week for a very unusual episode indeed from our hotel room in Kyoto, Japan, my wife, Kate Langson.
Hello.
Now, it's long been believed that Japan is at the forefront of modern technology. And while that was certainly true in the 90s, nations like South Korea and, of course, the US have given it real competition for the last two decades. So rather than talking you through some of the more obvious stuff that we've been experiencing out here on our holiday over the last 2 weeks, we're going to spend some time talking about the more nuanced observations that we've made. Now, I've been to Japan a few times before, but in the last 5 years, or rather in the 5 years it's been since I was last here, a lot has actually changed on the streets, I think. But we've not been confined to Tokyo. We've also come out to Kyoto, the old capital of Japan, and even found out what technology inside a geisha house is like by meeting several geisha and trainee geisha, Maiko, and asking them firsthand. We're going to start with that, but first, just wanted to thank our patrons supporting us every week at patreon.com/UK Tech. This is obviously a very special episode. It's going out to all of our listeners and no charge to our patrons, but thank you to everyone in whatever way you're supporting us for supporting us. So, Kate, just before we get into everything, overall, what's your experience of Japan been like so far?
It's been amazing. It's been really, really good, really interesting and really exciting.
Yeah. We're going to start talking about geisha and Maiko technology, because I think that's probably the most interesting thing that we've been able to experience since we've been out here. Did you know what a geisha was before you came to Japan?
I knew what a geisha was from the film Memoirs of a Geisha, but that's about it. So I didn't know a whole lot else, really.
Yeah.
So maybe you can tell me the difference between a geisha and a Maiko.
I can. Well, a Maiko is a geisha in training, and a geisha is a geisha who has been trained and has been doing it for several years. And there's a common misconception that geisha are prostitutes, which they are not. And the geisha themselves have been around for a few hundred years, based mostly here in Kyoto, in Japan, but there are geisha elsewhere around the country, and they're, you know, they're entertainers, they're dancers, they're musicians, they sing, they play shamisen, they talk to guests, and traditionally they've been extremely hard to see. I mean, a lot of people come to somewhere like Kyoto because it's seen as the traditional side of Japan. It's the home of the oldest Japanese culture, if you like. And every now and again, even we've spotted maybe two, like a couple on the streets, something like that. But it's very, very rare. There's only about 200 left now in Kyoto, including geisha and Maiko. But we managed to get into one of these tea rooms and had an evening with geisha. We were entertained with shamisen and had drinks poured and had some good conversation, and it seemed like a perfect opportunity to find out how much tech they actually have in their homes, which are called okiyas. It's where the geisha live together, essentially, and the truth is they don't really have a lot, do they? They're pretty much Luddite. So when they go into being a geisha, they have to give up their phones, so they don't have smartphones, they don't have any social media, there's no internet in these okiya. And we met probably five geisha in total, I think, over two nights, because we was it four?
One and then three.
That would be four, yes. So we met four.
And five maths.
And
right,
and the the answers were basically the same, that, you know, they live an extremely traditional life in these places. My thought was that maybe they would be able to have some kind of technology, or maybe there'd be a computer in there that they could read news, but they don't. They don't have anything. Their news comes from newspapers, printed newspapers, and from conversation with the people they're entertaining, or from each other, of course. They aren't allowed a phone. They have to give all of that up when they move into these okias. They keep in touch with their family, which they rarely see over the course of a year, by telephone on occasion, but mostly by written letters, which again sort of keeps this image of it being a very, very traditional industry very much accurate, I think. Now, did that surprise you when we met one? She was about 18, the first one we met, I think, 17, 18 years old. She was a Maiko, a geisha in training. And I don't think she'd used technology for a few years, because she'd been a Maiko for 3 or 4 years. Was that your...
Yeah, she came to be a Maiko at 16 and she was 18. She's 18 now. So she had to give up her phone and her friends and everything at 16. When you asked her what's the hardest thing about being a Maiko, or what do you miss most, she didn't say phones or the internet or Snapchat or anything. She said, oh, I miss the food from my hometown. So she didn't seem to miss it at all. I don't know if that's just because she couldn't explain that in English, or if that's genuine, but maybe after like a month you just sort of become so ingrained in that world that you just don't care anymore.
I do wonder that as well, yeah, because the second night that we went to a different tea room and met a geisha, fully qualified geisha, as well as another Maiko, and the Maiko there said the same thing, you know, that she had to give up all of this stuff. But I think what was quite interesting is that it wasn't a surprise to them to see, you know, the technology. Like, they were aware of it. And on our table, there was a French couple, and one of the Maiko we were talking to spoke decent English the second night, but she didn't speak French. So the French couple were using Google Translate to speak to her. So the French people spoke French into the phone, and then it played it back in Japanese, and then the Maiko spoke Japanese into the phone, and it spoke it back to them in French. And she was very familiar. She seemed very comfortable with it. And to me, it was quite strange seeing this very traditional, old-fashioned dressed girl in a traditional Japanese tea room, very confidently holding an iPhone with Google Translate and pressing the button to speak into it and then giving it back to play back to them. It was brilliant and quite surreal at the same time.
Yeah, definitely. And she, because they were quite young, so they probably had phones only a couple of years ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago in the case of some of the older ones, they would still know how to use an iPhone. Whereas the geisha, although we didn't see her or speak to her quite as much, like, she may not be quite as knowledgeable, but then she obviously, they all have their clients, don't they, who are like rich businessmen who have obviously all got phones, so that's probably where they keep up to date and stuff.
Yeah, definitely. So it was really fascinating. You know, they don't have computers in these akias. They just don't have anything. It really is as traditional as you know, as books make it out to be, and they seem to try and keep it as true to how it used to be in many ways as is possible. What was interesting, though, is that we asked both of the Maiko how they discovered the akia that they now lived in. How did they, you know, how they got into it in the first place? And both of them mentioned the internet in one form. What the first one said, she was looking through photographs, I think, and saw a picture of a Maiko and basically said, I want to be like that. And another one already knew a lot about geisha and was actually Googling good okias and places that she could go to and actually submit an application online. So it's interesting that although they are traditionally very sort of anti-tech, there are some computers somewhere because somebody's accepting internet-based applications to become a geisha, which I thought is very interesting. So let's move on to something else. We've referenced Google Translate, so it might be worth just pointing that out for a few minutes, because that to me has been one of the biggest. It's been a game changer to me. This is my third time in Japan, and on the previous two trips, which were sort of 5 and 6 years ago respectively, I didn't have the ability to hold up an iPhone at a sign or a menu or anything like that and have it translate on the fly in real time on my screen. And it has helped us out in a whole bunch of situations that we didn't really anticipate. You know, we thought it would just be menus and things like that, but it's helped us out with a lot of things. Kate, I think one of the most fun examples was when we went to one of the little nature reserves and all the signs about birds and things. Maybe you could talk about that.
Yeah, we went to a little nature reserve park type thing in Tokyo. Didn't really know what it was. We just had a couple of hours to spare, didn't we, and saw it on the map. When we got in, obviously everything was in Japanese, all the signs and everything. But we held up our phones using this app, and we got to read the signs. So we found out about this giant 1,000-year-old oak pine tree that we knew was there, and then we used our phones to find it and then found the sign underneath and found out how old this big massive tree was, which was exciting. And then there was a big board of all the birds that were around, and we translated the names and found out what they, you know, if they were English birds that we have here or if they were completely Japanese birds. So it was really, really nice, and it helped us enjoy the park more, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, we've probably used this app several times a day, every day since we've been here. And we have used it for menus and things, and that's been really, really helpful, even as recently as about 6 or 7 hours ago when we were trying to work out whether something was soup or tea in in a little cafe. And it turns out it was curry and tea. So we were sort of half right on one count, but it got us out of a sticky situation. One of the most interesting uses that I've used for it is actually something which we're also going to talk about separately, but it's kind of connected to this, and I subtitled this in our running notes here with printing fiasco, because it turns out it's really, really, really hard to get stuff printed in Japan unless you're staying in a business hotel, apparently. I've never needed to print anything when I've been out here in the past, but for these tea houses, when we were going to the geisha, we had to print out some documents, printed tickets, in order to show them to the tea house owners so that we could go in for our evening's entertainment. They didn't want us to just hold up a digital document. So, you know, but we didn't have a printer in the hotel, apparently, which I find baffling, but that's what they said. There was no printer here. There are convenience stores here that have photocopier printers, but they use USB sticks and memory cards. We had iPads and a Galaxy Note 8, but no ability to copy a file onto a USB stick to then take to one of the convenience stores to plug into the printer. Some of the printers in some of these convenience shops do let you print from the cloud, but to do that, you need to upload a file to an app that can't actually be downloaded from non-Japanese app stores. And it's not possible to change the store on my iPad because my account is registered in Britain. We also couldn't register a new account on the iOS device because we're not Japanese. We don't have a Japanese address here. And it took us about an hour to figure out the problem, or rather a solution to the problem, which involved using the Gmail account that we'd set up for guests coming to our wedding last year to send us correspondence to, because it hadn't been configured for a Google Play account. It had just been set up as email. So we chose Japanese for that account and used that on Kate's Galaxy Note 8, which allowed us then to access the Japanese Google Android App Store, download the app, which was free, incidentally, so it's even more baffling why this would be restricted, because the actual app itself was all in English, wasn't even in Japanese. Then I could email the document that we needed to print to Kate's phone, and then upload that into the app in her device, And then we could upload that to the printer wirelessly over the road in the convenience store. And the reason Google Translate is relevant to this story is because in the convenience store, all the buttons and the menu systems on the printer was in Japanese. So it was then a case of using Google Translate in real time to translate what all the buttons meant on the photocopier at about 11 o'clock at night. And finally, we got it printed. It did come out on photo paper for some reason, so I obviously either pressed the wrong button or mistranslated something. And we did get our printouts. And annoyingly, we didn't need them anyway when we got to the tea house, because there was only four people who were there to attend that evening. Two of them were already in, so they knew that we were just the other two. So it made the whole thing completely pointless anyway. But it did make me think that something as old-fashioned as printing in a place as high-tech as Japan is still incredibly difficult to do unless you prepare in advance. So that's my little word to people. If you're bringing a tablet and you think you might need to print, just chuck a USB stick in your bag, maybe bring a laptop, but there you go. It was annoying, wasn't it?
It was. I had very little part in this fiasco, but when you said, "Okay, I need your phone to do an app," I handed it over.
You did.
I was a good wife.
You were a very good wife. You used it to find hairspray at one point. Google, how was it using Google Translate in a convenience store to find hairspray?
That was really fun, actually. I'd run out of hairspray and I went in and there was all these cans of aerosol-based things that all looked very similar, all with pretty flowers on. I didn't know what was deodorant, what was hairspray, what was anything else. So I got my phone, scanned them all, found out, okay, this one's deodorant, this one's hairspray. Winner. I won. Yeah. I won the day.
You did win the day. You wouldn't want to confuse those two, would you? Because you'd have very nice smelling hair and very sticky armpits,
exactly.
I would imagine.
Exactly.
Yeah. While you were in these shops, you came back and you mentioned something else to me, which is that you noticed that there are absolutely no self-service checkouts here, which I'd never noticed before. Absolutely everything is staffed by a human. You can't do any of this on your own. That was really strange, wasn't it?
Yeah, I noticed it straight away because as an introvert, I don't like to speak to shop assistants at home, so I like to use self-service. And then when you get here, and obviously you'd probably rather just press a little flag that says English and do it all without having to speak to someone and embarrass yourself, but you can't because there aren't any. It's all people. They all speak very good English, so it's fine. I thought it was really strange. But the other thing is some restaurants kind of do have self-service where you go in, you pick your dish off a screen, a touch screen, you pay for it in the machine, and then you sit down, and then a waitress comes over, a waiter takes a little ticket that's been printed out and then brings you your food. So you actually don't have to speak to anyone in the restaurant sometimes. So it's a bit backwards, really.
It's backwards compared to Britain, certainly. Yeah. I thought that was weird. And another thing that I found interesting in another shop that we were in it was before we'd left Tokyo for Kyoto, but I'd bought a new lens for my camera because it turns out that I could save £300 by buying it here instead of at home, which was great. But then we noticed there was a massive sign saying you could pay for anything in that store with Bitcoin. And it was really heavily promoted.
It was a lot of stores as well. It wasn't just that one. It was lots of different things you could buy with Bitcoin in the whole shop. And yeah, it was really strange.
Yeah, there was posters everywhere, like really, really big ones. They were making quite a big deal about it, that you could pay for stuff in Bitcoin, which we don't tend to see very often at home. Occasionally in East London, you'll see a cafe that accepts Bitcoin, but typically it's not seen anywhere like that. But here it was really quite a big deal. So out on the street, there's been a lot of observations that we've made out on the street, I would say. A few interesting things. It seems that everybody here now seems to be using an iPhone. I remember the last time I was here, I noticed a lot of Samsung devices and still quite a lot of people using flip phones, traditional flip phones. Whereas now it's almost comical how you look down a train and everybody is using iPhones. And I have seen more iPhone 10s in the wild out here than I've seen in in London since it was released. You know, every train you'll see at least one or two people with an iPhone 10. They're everywhere, and they're easy to recognize because they have the vertical camera orientation, whereas the iPhone 8 and everything earlier has it horizontal. So they're easy to spot, and they're everywhere. And on top of that, the most popular headphones I've seen have been AirPods. Every single day we've seen several people with Apple AirPods, and almost nobody wearing over the head headphones, big, you know, big cans like we see in London. And they do sell them because we've seen them in the shops, but I think we've counted on one hand how many over the head headphones we've seen people wearing in Japan since we've been here, right?
Two, I think. Two people.
Two.
In 2 weeks, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was three.
Oh, okay.
May have been three, but it was fewer than five, which is amazing. But we spent one day in Akihabara, which is the kind of the highest high-tech geek center of Tokyo, and we noticed a couple of things out there, but the most interesting is that Pokemon Go is still very, very much a thing there. We walked past a group of people, didn't we, outside one store. How many people would you say were standing around playing Pokemon Go?
Oh, 30 people, and they were all adults. They weren't kids. They were, like, grown men, mostly men. I think there was, like, one or two women.
Yeah.
It must have been a gym or something, because they were all, like, hammering on the screen as if they were doing a gym. I haven't played it in ages. I assume that's what you still do. But yeah, I was just like, oh my god, people still play this. I know your brother still plays it, but yeah.
Yeah, Andy at CNET still plays it constantly. No, we haven't played it for a while. We're addicted to Elder Scrolls Legends now, apparently.
Yes.
You and I. And we saw one taxi drive past us that had a sign in the window that to my eyes, well, to our eyes, looked like it said, you can't take this taxi to drive around collecting Pokemon.
Yeah, it was a little Pikachu, wasn't it? Little Pikachu, and it looked like it had a cross or something, and it did look like you can't Pokemon Go in this taxi type yeah. thing, but we only saw one of those.
We did, and we've only taken one taxi since we've been here, which was a fun experience. And part of the reason for that, actually, this is a good segue, I think, is that it turns out, defying all expectation, Apple Maps is really, really good in Tokyo, particularly for public transport. We've not used Google Maps once since being here. Interestingly, you can't download offline Google Maps of Tokyo, or at least none of the places that we've been. So we've been using Apple Maps basically exclusively, and I was expecting to have problems with it because Apple Maps has a history of being less than capable on occasion, but as regular listeners will know, in I think May last year, I took a challenge to only use Apple Maps instead of Google Maps for a month, and just to see how much it improved. And certainly in London, it really had improved, and it's the service that I use now almost exclusively for mapping at home, because it's got very good and it's very fast on the iPhone. But I was expecting to be bitterly disappointed in Tokyo, but not at all. It's been absolutely brilliant. The maps have been great. And yeah, the public transport, I mean, every subway journey, every when we've taken bullet train, when we've wanted a bus, everything has been through Apple Maps. And I'm just so surprised. So if you're coming to Japan with an iPhone and you're wondering which mapping service to use, obviously the choice is always yours, but don't be put off trying Apple Maps if you're already used to using Apple Maps, because it really is good. And not just in Tokyo, in Kyoto as well. If anything, and more so in Kyoto, because there are fewer English signs generally in Kyoto than in Tokyo. So it's been a real help, hasn't it?
Yes. I've just been following you mostly, but we did get a bit lost today, didn't we?
Did we? Did we?
Not through any fault of Apple Maps.
Oh, the gigantic station that yeah. didn't have proper signage anywhere.
Yes.
Yeah, we did get a bit lost there.
Blame the signage.
It was the signage. It pointed us one way and it took us to a clothes shop.
It did. We walked a very long way.
I mean, if anything, that's the next step, really. Indoor mapping. You know, there are indoor maps now for a lot of places in sort of big capital cities and things and airports. I think Heathrow now uses iBeacons on on iPhone, probably on Android as well. But certainly I think it would be massively helpful in terms of encouraging tourism for these places to have their bigger shopping centres or transport hubs to be equipped for indoor mapping. It would certainly have made a huge difference for us, at least today, if not any other day. We can only conclude with one thing, I think, that we haven't talked about, and that is the bullet train, the Shinkansen, which I've never taken before. Kate, having never been to Japan before, has obviously never taken either. And how would you describe the bullet train experience, the 300 kilometer an hour train from Tokyo to Kyoto?
It was really lovely. It arrived exactly on time. You could sort of see it coming in and you were like, oh, it's 20 seconds early, and then it comes in, no, exactly on time. It was amazing. It was, to me, it was really smooth. It was a really lovely journey, and it was nice and quiet. I think, like, I was listening to music. It wasn't super loud or anything. It was It was nice.
I was playing Final Fantasy 15.
You were?
On the iPad.
There was no Wi-Fi, though, was there?
Well, there was meant to be. It said there was Wi-Fi, and even the English voice that announced the train's departure said, there is Wi-Fi, free Wi-Fi, but we looked and we couldn't find...
No, couldn't find anything.
There was loads, but they're all password protected, and there was no signage up like there is on other trains and things to say, here's how you access the Wi-Fi, but it wasn't there. So if anything, the bullet train internally is quite low-tech. There's not a lot on there. You know, there's no vending machines that you see everywhere in stations here. It was a woman pushing a trolley up and down for 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
Literally. So it's interesting that from the outside you see this train as a half-mile long, elongated, bottlenose dolphin-like affair and think this is the height of technology and sophistication in transport. And you get on it and you're like, yeah, it's fine, but where's the tech? It's very, very stripped down and focused.
Are they quite old, though? They're not, like, brand-new trains, are they?
No, I mean, they've been around for many, many years,
yeah.
But, I mean, some are more modern than others because they keep making them. And there's loads of different ones. It's not like there's not one bullet train. There's loads of bullet trains. There's loads of different... Some of them go at different speeds. Some of them are stopping services. They're used by commuters. Some of them travel, you know, the length of the country almost. Some of them do shorter journeys. In my head, I thought the bullet train was the bullet train. And you took it from Tokyo to Kyoto or Osaka.
Yeah, there's like one a day or something.
But,
yeah,
but they're not. There's like one pulling in every 10 or 15 minutes in the station, just on the platforms we were on, wasn't there?
And
there was about 6 or 7 platforms, Shinkansen platforms, I think, in Tokyo Station and in Kyoto as well. There's quite a few. So that was quite surprising. There was a very interesting poster on the wall of the platform of the bullet train that said, no selfie sticks, because if they get caught in the overhead cables, you'll get electrocuted to death. And the thing is, if you were standing on the platform, you'd need to be holding a selfie stick that was about 15 feet long in order for it to touch one of these overhead cables, which is completely unnecessary and doesn't exist.
I wouldn't put it past some of these Japanese kids to have a 15-foot-long selfie stick.
We have seen a lot of them, haven't we? They have been everywhere. Well, I think that's a good point to end the show on. We didn't want to go a third week without an episode, and we've been keeping notes as we've been going around on our holiday of all the tech we've seen, and we've picked some of our favourite observations. We have had more. If you've got any questions about anything we've talked about, or if you're planning a trip to Japan, or if you've got any questions just in general about life, or if you want to know the ins and outs of veterinary nursing, then you can email Kate via hello@techpodcast.uk. Kate, despite being my wife, you are also technically a guest on the show, and guests get to promote something and tell people where they can follow them and stuff. So go nuts. Where do people look up your Instagram, your books, things like that?
If you are so inclined, I suppose. I have a book that I wrote probably a year ago called The Fox of Richmond Park. If you just stick that in Google or Amazon, you can find that. It has many, many lovely reviews, not written by myself. You can find me on Instagram or Twitter on Kate Langson. That's about it. Or email Nate.
Okay, Oi Maika. It's Kate Langsdale. It's basically the same as me, but with a K instead of an N.
Yes.
Well, thanks to everyone, and thank you to our patrons for supporting us. Hopefully we'll be back next weekend with a regular scheduled programming, and we hope that we'll have some emails to discuss on that show. We'll be back with Ian then, and we'll see you then. Sayonara.
Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.